Take me where the promises are real.
My name's Tim, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting on NavaZoom, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual, in our personal stories, describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women on Zoom tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. And we believe it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too. I must have this thing. And Kelly is going to do the honors.
Hey guys, I'm Kelly. I'm an alcoholic. You guys are in for a treat. I really admire Amnesty. It's been a joy to work with her. She is so, so dedicated to her program and to having a healthy life, which is really cool. I've had the opportunity to watch her really establish the principles of this program and all her affairs and have it spread into everything she does, and everything that touches in her life has been able to be influenced by this program. She is just a very strong and courageous woman. Like most of us, she doesn't always want to do what God is asking, but she, you know, pulls up her bootstraps and gets her waders on, because when it gets deep, she keeps trudging that road to happy destiny. With that, I give you Amnesty.
I'm Amnesty, and I'm an alcoholic. I first want to say thank you to Kelly and to Tim for having me tonight. And Kelly, I'm staring right at you. You're on the big screen, so I'm talking right to you. I wanted to thank them for having me speak tonight. It's funny that Kelly actually said what she said, because a few weeks ago we were doing virtual step work, and I admitted to her that I hadn't done Zoom meetings yet because I was really resistant to it, and I'm not a fan of change. I don't know if anyone can relate, but when everything happened and everything shifted to online, I didn't want to do it. I was really resistant, and I told Kelly about it, and she said, just do it, just get on it, just do the Zoom meeting, and so I did, and the first Zoom meeting I did was hearing Kelly speak, and then as soon as that meeting ended, Kelly texted me and said, would you be interested in telling your story? And so, of course, I thought, like, oh, go figure, the first time that I join a Zoom meeting, now I've got to be of service doing not my most favorite thing ever, and so when she texted me that, I said, am I interested? No. Will I? Yes. And it's funny because my higher power, he has perfect timing for everything. And like I said, this isn't my most favorite form of service, but I do it, right? And at the beginning of this year, I started doing some deeper work, and I started to work on areas of my life that I hadn't really looked at yet, and I tried to make some changes. So I've been going through a lot this year in regards to that, and last night everything kind of came to a head with it and exploded, and I got all in myself, and I got in my head, and it was all about me, right? Poor, pitiful me. Why is this happening to me? And what I've learned in this program is that when I'm consumed with myself, the best way to get out of that is to be of service. And lo and behold, today just so happens to be the day that, you know, Tim had asked me to share my story. And so I was thinking about that, and I was thinking about just how the timing always works out, right? I didn't want to do the Zoom meetings. I finally got on. I didn't want to share my story, and then look what happened. So I'm really actually excited to be here and to be sharing my story tonight. I'm actually not that nervous. Being online and staring right at my sponsor is not too bad versus in person. So I'm feeling okay. Anytime I tell my story, I like to kind of think back to the last time I told my story, and I like to think about where I was and what I've gone through since then, and because for me, my program is constantly evolving. At least I try to keep it that way, right? I'm always trying to stay in the middle of it and do what I can do to continue growing. And so I really like to look back and kind of take a little bit of time to reflect. And what I've noticed is I tend to get stuck on what it was like. And now, what it's like now is the good stuff. That's honestly, to me, my favorite thing. So I'm going to try to switch it up a little bit tonight and not spend so much time in what it was like, because I have a lot of stuff that I'd love to talk about that has happened, you know, since I got sober. But my sobriety date is August 1st, 2014. I grew up in Virginia, and as I was growing up, I lived with my father and my stepmother. From a very young age, I felt very unwanted. I felt unloved. I felt like I wasn't cared about. I felt like I was just tolerated. So that separate, different, and alone, I felt that from the very beginning of my life. I had a stepbrother and a stepsister, and I felt as if they were cared more for than myself. Today I know that my parents did the absolute best that they can do, and I hold absolutely no ill will towards them. And I actually just got back today, an hour and a half ago, from the beach with them down in Florida. But growing up, I felt this way, right? I felt different. Something was wrong with me. I didn't fit in my own family to begin with. And there was just something not right. And so that's kind of the foundation that I grew from. And so being a child and feeling this way and growing up with these feelings, I wanted something to change the way I felt, no matter what it was. My whole life, I've chased anything and everything that will change that for me. And for me, when I drink, bad things happen. I have consequences, severe consequences. I got sober at 22, and honestly, I don't think that I could have gone much longer because of just how reckless I was. When I was in eighth grade, I got expelled from school because of my disease. I ended up having to go to a brand new school where I knew nobody. So here I am, this new student, this new kid, right? I feel separate, different, and alone since I was a child. That's what I believe, you know, that I'm not wanted. I'm not liked. Nobody's going to accept me for who I am. So what do? I drink. That's how I fit in. That's how I can exist in the world. That's how I can get through those emotions and those feelings that are just weighing me down. So I'm in ninth grade, and I sneak out of the house one night with a friend. I was with a bunch of other teenagers going around rural Virginia in these windy, hilly back roads. We were going over the hills real fast so that we could get that butterfly feeling. And one of the hills, it went up a little bit, it turned, and then it went down. And the driver, he was 16 and had been drinking, and we had all been drinking. He didn't notice that the hill turned, and so he just kept going straight. And at the top of that hill, we hit an SUV dead on. I was in the middle back of an Acura RSX, and on impact, I was ejected through the closed sunroof. I landed in a small ditch on the side of the road, and the car finished flipping and landed on top of me. The firefighters came out, and they were ill-equipped to get me out, so a special reactions team had to come out. I was life-flighted to the nearest hospital, where I was placed into a medically induced coma. I lost the total volume of my blood. I broke my shoulder. I broke my pelvis. I had a brain injury, a spinal injury. I tore off the complete left side of my face, and every internal organ I had was completely smashed. Due to my age and a number of other factors, I was able to recover fairly easily, and I was released from the hospital after 21 days, wheelchair-bound and in a sling for my arm. And that was one of my first experiences with drinking, right? So right out of the gate, I'm having these consequences, right? And obviously it was an accident. Nobody meant to cause that. But that's how it was, right? In 10th grade, I snuck out once again, and I found myself in a situation at a party where I was locked in a bedroom with two boys that tried to take advantage of me. I went forward and pressed charges, and the entire school, for the most part, took their side. They were seniors. They were popular. They were baseball players. And so growing up, I had this feeling, right? I'm separate, different, and alone. Nobody likes me. Nobody wants me. Nobody cares about me. And now I have these students telling me all of those things, right? They're telling me I'm no good. I'm a liar. You know, I'm not wanted. I'm not liked. All of these things. And so it's just reconfirming everything I already feel. So when I turned 18, I left Virginia. I said, I've got to get out of there. I hate everyone there. I hate all of my memories. All these bad things keep happening, and I just want to start over. So I moved to Atlanta, and down here, now I'm unsupervised. Now I have no parents, and I can really do what I want to do, and that's exactly what I did. I enrolled in college, tried to do that, flunked out. When I was 20, I got pulled over for a DUI. The whole time, I'm telling the cop, please let me go. Please let me go. Like, I'll never drink and drive again. And I meant it. With everything in my being, I meant that if he let me go, I would never drink and get behind the wheel again. He let me go. He let me call Safe Ride to pick me and my car up off the side of the road and drive me home. It was about a 20-minute drive. I get home. Safe Ride drops me off. They drop my car off, and they leave. As soon as I see them leave my neighborhood, I get back in my car and I go to drink some more. Because for me, when I start drinking, I can't stop. No consequences are going to stop me, right? 20 minutes prior, I was just pulled over for a DUI that I got out of, which never happens, blue and everything. But all of that memory of what had just happened and everything I had said, I'll never drink and drive again, gone. Because I had to keep drinking. I could not stop. When I was 21, I got fired from a job because I got drunk at the job. You know, I was a bartender, perfect job for an alcoholic, and I got too drunk and I started yelling at customers. So the manager pulled me from behind the bar and told me to go home. That night, I hit a car in a parking lot, at a gas station. And the whole time, again, I'm sitting here blaming this guy who's parked. You know, what are you doing in my way? I'm trying to leave. I'm trying to go somewhere. Like, you need to move. And I just have no idea that I'm causing all of this. All of the wreckage that's going on in my life, I have no clue that it's of my own doing. And all I keep doing is I just keep drinking to solve this, right? I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's wrong with me. I don't know why my life is falling apart. So what am I going to do? I'm going to drink and I'm going to cover it up. So at that point, I lost that job. I flunked out of school. I couldn't keep a relationship. I terrorized men. Anyone that gave me attention for more than a day, I just sunk my teeth into and just terrorized them. I didn't have friends left because nobody wanted to be around me. I wasn't fun anymore. I was miserable, you know. I was slowly killing myself. I got down at one point to 96 pounds. It was just a really, really bad place. And again, I was 21 at this time. You know, I didn't have a very long drinking career, but I mean, I went in and I tore it up. So here I am, I'm in this horrible place. I get fired from this job and my life's going nowhere and I have nothing to show for anything. I'm just in a really dark place. So what ends up happening is I have this friend, the one friend I have at the time. And she says, I've got this guy I want you to date. You know, I think you guys would be great. So we start dating. He's in recovery. And so he's dating me. And about 3 months in, he's like, all right, you know, this has been fun. I think you've got a problem. You don't have to quit drinking. But I don't want to be with you if you're going to keep going on the way you are. And at that point, I had given up my townhouse that I had for this guy that I was head over heels in love with. Given up my townhouse, I had, again, flunked out of college. I had moved from Kennesaw out to Gwinnett, and I felt very stuck. I am a very one-track mind kind of person, and so I didn't see any way out of this situation. I thought that, well, crap, I've got to quit drinking because I have no other option. And I'm really grateful that I felt that way. Because had I not felt stuck and had I felt or thought that there was another option, I don't think I would be here today. So this was in February, and I decided that I was going to quit. I wasn't going to do AA. I wasn't going to do recovery. I wasn't going to do anything. I was just going to not drink. And from February to August, I drank three more times. And then come August, I just stopped, and only God knows why I was able to stay stopped. That first year of my sobriety, I did absolutely nothing. I went to a couple speaker meetings here and there, but I did nothing else. And I got worse. For so long, the way that I handled life was through drinking, right? Like, if there was ever a problem, I solved it with drinking. I didn't know how to do life without a drink. So for that first year, here I am, stuck with what the real problem is, me, without any solution, my alcohol, right? I got absolutely worse. It got to a point where I remember having a conversation with the man I was dating, and we're engaged now, having a conversation with him thinking, I just need to go to the doctor and be put on medication because I'm convinced there's something chemically wrong in my brain. And if I can just take a little pill to fix that, then everything will be okay. And that's always what my thoughts were. If I can just find some kind of external solution for this internal problem, then everything will be okay. So here I am, I'm a year in, and I'm an absolute joy to be around. I'm the person that follows you around screaming until 3 o'clock in the morning, because I don't know what to do with myself. I don't know what to do with my thoughts. I don't know what to do with my feelings, and my shoulders are always up to my ears, and I'm always tense, and I'm always angry, and I'm just miserable. And I even remember thinking at one point, if this is what sobriety is, I want nothing to do with it. Because at the time, that's what I thought. I genuinely thought that my problem was drinking. And I couldn't figure out for the life of me why, when I stopped drinking, my life didn't get better. So I'm about a year in, and I'd gone to a couple meetings here and there, and I made one friend. For so long, I had always gone to, like, his recovery group, his meetings with his friends, and I always clung on to him, right? I needed someone to be there and hold my hand through it, right? I was filled with fear. So I made one friend, and I remember I'm sitting outside of a Chipotle with her one night. And again, this is another one of those moments. It wasn't me saying this. It just came out of my mouth. I told her, if he leaves me, I will be drinking tomorrow. And I don't want that to be an option anymore. It was at that moment that I finally made the decision to try the program, right? I'd been to enough meetings to kind of get the basic gist, and I was going to give it a shot. So I get a sponsor. I start working the steps. I do 1, 2, and 3, maybe started 4, and I had a bad 2 weeks. And I thought, you know what? I gave it my best shot. I did everything I could. You know, I really, really tried this thing. It's not working. I'm going to go drink. And I got in my car, and I went to drive to a place in Buford that I like to go drink at. And somewhere along the way on that drive, again, this isn't me, the thought comes to my mind, just go to Serenity House and get a schedule. I'd been there once, maybe twice, but not really. So I get to Buford, and instead of going right to go drink, I go left. I pull into Serenity House. It's a Sunday or Monday, I don't know which day. And I walk in, and there's 2 women in there. And I say, oh, I'm just here for a schedule for meetings and all that. And they say, oh, well, we've got a women's meeting tonight. You should come back. And I thought, okay, yeah, you know, maybe. And I leave, and as I'm leaving, I thought, okay, I'm going to try this again. Right? Like, something inside of me was just saying, just try this place. And so I went back to that women's meeting, and I can say, with absolute certainty, it was at that very moment that my life completely changed. And I think today, part of that is that up until that point, I wasn't doing it for myself, right? I wasn't really doing and going to any lengths to stay sober. up until that point, I'd always needed someone else to hold my hand and to walk me through things. And I'm not meaning in like a recovery sense, but in a codependent way. I never wanted to just step out on my own and really give this a shot. But at that moment, when I turn left on Buford instead of right, I finally think that I fully surrendered. And I went back to that women's meeting, and I couldn't tell you anything that they said. I probably shared. And all I know is when I left that meeting, the feeling that I had. And I just had this sense of just ease and like everything was going to be okay. And so at that point, I switched sponsors, and I started going up there by myself. I took my recovery into my own hands at that point, and I decided at that very moment that nothing was going to come in my way, and I was going to give it an honest shot. I'm working the steps, and the whole God thing, right? Like, I believed, but not really. I grew up in a religion, but it never really, I don't know. I don't know what I thought, honestly. I had no opinion. But I thought that you guys, I don't know, we're all tricked, we're all fooled, that somewhere along the way you guys maybe thought that you were really happy and that this whole thing was working and this God thing. So I was open to it, you know, but I didn't really believe in it. And then I had a situation where I had my car broken into and a weapon was stolen out of it. And I tell you, the feeling that overcame me when I found out that I potentially could have just supplied someone with something that could kill another human being, the feeling that overcame me was just like at the end of that first year. I thought that the world was ending. I'm a very, very dramatic person. And I just thought that the worst thing in the world had just happened. But at this point, I had been in the program long enough to know that there are certain actions you can take. And so at that moment, I'm freaking out. I'm in a horrible headspace. And so I drive to my meeting. And as I'm there, I'm just talking to somebody. And he says, why don't you try saying the Serenity Prayer? And I'm like, okay, yeah, sure, I'll try it. So I get home that night, and again, like, I'm super dramatic. And I'm, like, sobbing and, like, snot coming out of my nose and just the whole thing, and I'm just overcome with guilt and shame and remorse and like all these horrible feelings. And I decided to try praying. I hit my knees and I stayed down there for probably a good hour. And I said the Serenity Prayer with every ounce of feeling within me. I said it slow. I savored every word. And I mean, I laid it all out there. And I begged God, again, I'm so dramatic, begged God to take this feeling from me. But I mean, at the time, like that's how it felt. I mean, I felt like I was drowning. And I tell you what, I woke up the next morning and all of those feelings were gone. And I can say that it doesn't always happen like that. Actually, it doesn't ever really happen like that. But at that moment, I finally had a sense of relief and an understanding of what it was that you guys experienced. And at that moment, that's when I knew there was something to this. And it was at that moment that I knew that my higher power was going to be able to get me through anything. It was a really, really powerful experience. Again, it doesn't always happen like that, you know. There's times that I pray about things and I don't get answers. Or at least I don't realize that I'm getting answers, you know. But at the time, I mean, I think that's what I needed to really fully get a hold of this thing. Another really kind of big moment for me was, you know, we do 4 and 5 and we look at, you know, our resentments and everything. And we look at our part in it. And, you know, I mentioned growing up, I felt some type of way about my father and my stepmother and the way that I thought I should be treated. And as I'm doing my inventory, you know, my sponsor at the time is pointing things out to me. And I don't want to hear it, you know. So then I get to 8 and 9, and she suggests that I make an amends to them. And I said, absolutely not. I did nothing to them. I deserve, you know, an amends from them, and I owe them nothing. You know, I was an innocent child, and I did nothing wrong, right? And she said, okay, I want you to just be willing to make an amends. And I said, okay, fine. Every now and then I'd pray about it, right? If I saw something on Facebook, right, that irritated me, I'd all of a sudden pray, like, God, please remove this, you know? And it took me about 3 years into the program before I kind of had what I needed. I remember I was at a speaker meeting, and she was sharing about something that was completely unrelated. It was a completely different situation, but what she shared about making an amends really hit me. And it was at that moment, it was almost like that, you know, the lights came on, you know, God opened my eyes, and I saw my part in everything with them. And at that moment, I knew exactly what I needed to do. You know, I got in my car, I drove to Virginia, and I went and I made amends to my father and my stepmother. And when I tell you, I walked into that with so much hurt, so much anger, so much resentment, hatred. I mean, I hated these people, right? And I walked into that with all of these feelings. And I made my amends, and it was a very simple amends. It wasn't overly emotional, very straightforward, to the point. Didn't get into depth with a lot of stuff. When I walked away from that, I was freed of 25 years of hurt, of pain, right? And for me, I went my first 3 years in recovery carrying that around, because I wasn't ready, and it takes what it takes for us, but I walked around with that pain and that hurt and that anger, and then to walk in there and to make that amends and to be freed of that, and to no longer have that resentment, and all I had to do was keep it to my side and make that amends, it was hands down the most amazing experience I've had so far in sobriety. When I left Virginia after I made my amends, my stepmother, she sent me a text message, and it said something to the effect of, thank you so much for what you said. I'm sorry if I ever made you feel like I didn't love you, because I did. I can't even describe the emotions that came over me. And since then, I have not had any feelings of anger or resentment or anything towards them. And like I said, I mean, this was 25 years of hatred. And I honestly today believe that they did the best that they could. And I honestly believe that they love me and that they care about me and that I'm wanted. You know, like I said earlier, I just got back from spending the weekend in Florida with them, and we had an amazing time. You know, and that's only through the gift of this program, right? That is only through working the steps and being willing to be willing, you know, and turning things over to my higher power and just letting him change me, right? For so long, I thought it was everything else and everyone else that was the problem. You know, when all along, it's within me. I'm looking for these external solutions to an internal problem. You know, the spiritual malady. That's what I've learned so far. I've had a lot of really incredible experiences in this program, and I've learned a lot of things. And, you know, in regards to, you know, my father and my stepmother, I had the experience I had growing up, and it wasn't the worst and it wasn't the best, and I know that now. But the cool thing about it is I get to look at that, the whole dynamic and the whole situation, and I get to learn from it and grow from it today. I've got a stepdaughter now, and I've been in her life since she was two. She's almost nine. and she doesn't have to go through the things I went through, you know? And had I not had the experiences I had and felt the way I felt as a child, I don't think that I would be able to be half the step parent that I am today, you know? And I honestly believe that, you know, God has a reason for everything, you know? And if I just stay open-minded, you know, He reveals things to me that are pretty cool. For so long, all I've ever wanted is to feel wanted and to feel like I belonged and to feel important. And I found that in these rooms. I have awesome friends. I've got an awesome fellowship. And it's funny because one of my friends got married last year. My fiance and I, we don't do weddings. We don't like weddings at all. But I told him, I said, okay, with this wedding, you have to be there with me because it's my best friend's wedding. And he said back to me, he said, Amnesty, you can't say that because you call everyone your best friend. Like, you can't just say, oh, it's my best friend's wedding, you have to go, because you call everyone your best friend. And we kind of went back and forth. And later I was thinking about it, and I realized that I do that because I'm just so grateful to have these people in my life. You know, it's something totally different to have women, for me, women that lift you up and that pray for you and that pray with you and that are trying to better themselves and that are there to help you no matter what it is you go through. I mean, my girls have walked through some stuff with me, you know, and I just think it's such a beautiful thing to be able to have that. And it's only because of this program, you know. It really is just an incredible experience. I've gotten to do a lot of really cool things in sobriety so far. I moved here when I was 18, I'd always wanted to go to the University of Georgia. But again, I flunked out of college, you know, after 2 years. And I applied to Georgia 3 times. And finally, on the 3rd time, I got accepted. And last year, I was finally able to graduate. You know, it took me 7 years to get that degree, but that's okay. And again, it's only because of this program. And the cool thing is it opens up doors and it opens up different opportunities that you wouldn't even know about, right? So I went to Georgia, and they had this awesome thing, the Collegiate Recovery Community. And it's a whole recovery community within the university. And so I'm going out to school, right? And here I am surrounded by all these college kids. First of all, they're, you know, way younger to begin with. Not way younger, but they're younger than me. And they're all partying, and it's in Athens and Party City. But I have this community there now that supports students in recovery. And so I got to go through my college experience doing things with them, right? We got to do all sorts of excursions, and we went on a retreat, and we had weekly meetings, and it's just really cool how wide this thing really goes. You know, I randomly got my real estate license. I hate doing real estate, so don't ask me to help. But I did that, you know, just because. I honestly believe that as long as I stay sober, I can do anything, right? Anything I want to do, as long as I stay sober, I'll get there. It might take me 7 years, right, to get that degree, but I'll get there, you know, because of this program. I go to Vegas a couple times a year. I love Vegas. It's my favorite place in the world. And there's alcohol everywhere, but I'm no longer enslaved to it. You know, I can be free. I can walk around. I can, you know, exist amongst everyone else in the world without needing to drink. You know, I've been to bachelorette parties. I've been to weddings, not my favorite. Been to weddings. I've been to baby showers. Anything and everything that a normal person can do, I have done. It's only because I continue to do the things that I've been taught to do in the beginning, right? I'm praying. I'm working with my sponsor. I don't just do the steps one time and then I'm cured and I'm done. Like, that's not how this works for me. I'm working the steps with my sponsor. When needed, I seek outside help. That's a new thing for me this year. I've gone to some of our different, some of our different, the different 12-step programs. I communicate with my fellowship. I'm constantly trying to connect and grow my spiritual side. I'm working on the meditation thing. I'll get it one day. I truly believe that. I sponsor other women. I answer the phone when somebody calls, right? If somebody's calling and I don't feel like answering it, I do. I share my story when I'm asked to do that. And I just try to the best of my ability for today to do everything that I can do for my recovery, because the life that I have today is just incredible. You could have asked me 5 years ago, 6 years ago, what I wanted out of life and what I would like to happen, and I would have never said anything resembling what I have today. Because I honestly thought at the end there that the feelings that I have inside, the peace, the calmness, the ability to pause, I honestly did not think I would ever be able to achieve that, right? I had accepted the fact that I was just going to be crazy. You know, that's just who I was. I was just a crazy person that's going to scream at you until 3 o'clock in the morning. That was just me. So to be able to experience life with serenity and peace, and not be driven by my emotions, is a gift that I never knew I wanted. To have that calm mind, to be able to be present in life, I never would have pictured this. I didn't know it was an option. I didn't realize that all along the problem was within me. But the good news with that was that since I was the problem, there was a solution. And I found so far that as long as I continue to do the things that I've been taught, and as long as I continue to show up and I put my recovery first, I can have the most incredible life. I always run out of time. I've learned how to be a friend. I've learned how to be a daughter. Right, that was something that came up is, Amnesty, if you want your father to be a father, you need to be a daughter, you know? Like, didn't really want to have to look at what I was doing, right? I just wanted to put it all on him. I've learned how to be a stepmom. I learned how to be a student. Now I've learned how to be a worker. All of these things I've learned in this program, and it's only because I finally, that first day or that one day that I turned left and I made that decision to do something for myself and fully surrender to whatever was going to happen. It was at that moment that everything changed for me. That's why I'm able to do the things that I'm able to do in life today. And that's the only reason, is because I continually give it to God. I'm out of control. This is not mine. And I turn it over. So it's been quite a journey. And hopefully I get to do it for some more years. So thank you for having me. Yeah.
Thank you, Amnesty. You didn't run out of time. You filled up your time. It was a beautiful story. I see Kelly is over there just clapping and smiling, and you got a lot of love here. And Tinsley is clapping. Oh, yeah. AJW is clapping. Susan S. clapping.
First I slept, and then I crept to a hope-filled dream. Rescue me, and finally, waking there I see. I look into love's window for a soul that's meant for me. Takes me where the promises are real.
sometimes quickly, sometimes slow. We get just what we need on a broad highway, stride for stride. We walk eternally. Look into love's window for a heart. Takes me where the promises are real. And I always long for something that set me free. Take me.